Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Will O.J. Howard be a Buccaneer when the 2021 season starts? And could Odell Beckham Jr. be headed to the Bucs? Will the Bucs draft a quarterback this year? We've got all your mailbag questions answered 100% correctly on this edition of Sports Day Tampa Bay. I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times, along with producer Steve Versnick. We'll get to all your mailbag questions in just a second. Before we get started, as we tape this podcast, today, Tuesday, by 4 p.m., teams are supposed to declare if they are designating a franchise or transition player, and that may or may not change. I'll tell you what was happening Monday. The NFL had not yet given, at least late in the afternoon on Monday, had not yet given teams the official salary cap number for 2021. And this is something that they desperately need. Obviously, there was talk about perhaps delaying or moving back that deadline for the franchise or transition player designations, because without a salary cap, folks, you can't begin to know how much money you have, how are you going to do contracts beyond 2021, all those things. So how do you know who you're going to designate as your franchise player? So we're getting closer to the March 17th start of free agency, which is the, it's the official signing day. First day you can sign players, first day of the new league year. But before that, there's a three-day tampering period, which the legal tampering period, it goes on anyway, but March 14th. So we're getting closer to that time when these guys will all become free agents or hit the market. They can begin negotiating with teams. They can actually sign contracts with teams beginning on the 17th at 4 p.m. So, they need to get business moving here. And the reason why they don't have a salary cap number yet, they think it's going to be around $183 million for each team, which is significantly lower than it has been by almost, $17, $18, $20 million. And that's because, it's based on shared revenues. And the revenues last year obviously went way down because there was limited fan attendance, in some cities no attendance. So that's the shared revenue. And, what they do with the salary cap is you're trying to project things, right? So I was reading something that DeMaurice Smith said, who's the executive director of the NFLPA, and basically he said, you're trying to project, okay, what is attendance going to be like? Is it 80%? Is it 90%? Is it 50%? What we're trying to anticipate what the revenues will be for attendance. And then also, they're in the middle of negotiating all these TV deals, 10-year TV deals with all their network partners, and some of those may not begin for a couple more years in terms of the increased revenues, but some may begin right away. So again, that's something else that the union would like to wait until they have a firm idea, or maybe some of those agreements signed, and they're on the verge of being signed, many of them, very close to having some of those deals done, and then that would increase the salary cap. That would certainly help the players and frankly help the teams too. Because I think what's going to happen this year, Steve, is you're going to have, if it stays the way it is, the salaries will be there for some of the top guys. But, man, you're going to see a lot of one-year deals and a lot of guys return to their teams, which may be good for the Bucs because nobody has any money. There's about 10 teams that have some money under the salary cap. There's a bunch that are sort of, like the Bucs, where they're about $15 million or less under. And then, there's some that have a lot, like Jacksonville. But for the most part, there's not going to be a ton of money out there for free agents, and there's always a whole lot of free agents. So it's sort of musical chairs.
Yeah, if you're someone like Chris Godwin, you may almost welcome the franchise tag in this case. Mm-hmm. Not that he wants it. He wants his long-term deal. He wants money. But the free agent market and the money may be better next year to negotiate a long-term contract than this year. And he's young enough. Mm-hmm. You're Shaq Barrett. You're a little older. You've already been franchised a year. You probably do want to go ahead and get that deal now, even if it's maybe a little less than you would have gotten. But you want that long-term security. But, we saw that some in the NHL. We've seen it in baseball where, you know, some, you know, outside the top guys, the contracts aren't there. Taylor Hall signed with Buffalo for a 1-year deal in the NHL, and it was basically let me get, you know, I think he's getting $8 million or something like that. Let me get it for 1 year, and then I'll work on my long term deal next year when you hope more fans are in the stands, the television revenues are coming up. Much like the NFL, the NHL has new television deals. They're negotiating it right now. And you know, you hope that the opportunities are going to be better for long-term deals next year. So there, some NFL players may be looking at it that way. Now, the NFL, you know, the risk of injury and all that is there too. So you kind of have to weigh that. Do I want to wait till next year and hopefully get a big deal and sign a 1-year deal now? Or do I really want to get my long-term deal now? And then, you know, you got to have teams willing to do that too.
Exactly right. And, you know, so all of this hopefully will be worked out maybe by the time you guys hear this podcast, maybe on by today at 4 p.m. when they're supposed to have a franchise player, they will. And if they do, I firmly expect it to be Chris Godwin. I mean, I've gone back and forth with this. I think you can make a very good argument that Shaq Barrett's the more, you know, important player just by virtue of edge rusher versus receiver. And there's no question that those guys are hard to find. I mean, he had 19 and a half sacks 2 years ago, 8 sacks last year, had 3 against the Packers in the championship game, 4 overall in the playoffs. He's an impact player. There's no question about it. He'll be 29, I think, next November, I want to say. And, you know, a guy that you'd absolutely want on your team. But the problem is, if you franchise him again, you have to guarantee him 120% of his salary, which he made 15.8 last year. It's not as much as he could make on the open market, but he wants a long-term deal, and I'm not sure he would be very amenable to being franchised again. I don't know if you'd be looking at a contract holdout situation or what, because he wants that long-term deal, and nobody wants to be franchised twice, and he's getting up there in age. He's not Chris Godwin. He doesn't have time to wait. Frankly, none of these guys do. They play a collision sport where you can be done for your career. I mean, even Chris Godwin will be facing a very nervy year, right? Because he could go out there under the franchise tag, and even though he would make some $16 million, which is way more than the 2.4 or so that he made last year in base salary, it's only for 1 year. And if he were to have a cataclysmic injury or a season or career-ending injury, he'll never make any more money. So you get the money while you can. You get as much as guaranteed as you can. But Chris Godwin is only 25 years old. Shaq Barrett is obviously much, much older than that. So it just feels to me like when you have a guy that you drafted in the third round that's emerged as a number one receiver, and you've got him and Mike Evans for another year with Tom Brady, remember who your quarterback is. Remember what they're trying to do here. They're trying to go back-to-back. They won a Super Bowl with Brady. They want to maximize all the talent around him they can. Godwin does so much as a slot receiver in this offense. It's not like Julian Edelman. He's not just running routes. He's blocking. He's rooting out linebackers. He's doing a lot of things in the run game, and he can do it all. And he's a key part of their offense. And I just don't think they want to take a guy, you know, with the best years ahead of him, and you know, let him go someplace else and be their receiver. Because after next year, I mean, Mike Evans is going into his eighth season. You know, even though he's under contract, I don't know how much guaranteed money he has left. But you know, you might, if you saw a drop off with him, maybe you make a decision after next year. But in any case, that's my prediction. I don't know if it'll hold true, but it's certainly something that I think is almost becoming a consensus that if they do franchise a player, it'll probably be Godwin and not Shaq Barrett. And then you say, well, you could lose Shaq Barrett. Well, yeah, you absolutely could, and maybe you do. But at the end of the day, just because guys go into the market and talk to other teams, sometimes, and this doesn't always happen, but sometimes, you know, it's a way of setting your market and saying, well, we have a disagreement. We think we're worth this. You think they're worth that. Aha, here's a team that's willing to pay me what I want. It doesn't mean you shop the offer. You come back to your team and say, hey, will you match this? That's really not the way teams do business. But by the same token, it does give agents and players a chance to look around, and they can still, you know, they can still sign with their former team. Nothing to preclude that. So I think you might see that with Lavonte David. I think you might see that with Shaq Barrett. They simply don't have a ton of room under the salary cap to get a lot of these guys in. And, you know, you've got to make room for draft picks and things like this as well. But the Bucs will create some salary cap room. We know they're going to do it with Tom Brady. Again, trying to figure out what that first year is in terms of, you know, how you can you know, pay Brady, add another year, pay Brady some of his $25 million up front. He also has like almost $4 million in incentives, likely to be earned incentives because of what he got paid and bonuses to win the Super Bowl and go through the playoffs. That might be paid to him in advance as a bonus. So there's a lot of things you can do to lower that cap number for this year and help you retain some of these free agents. But they have so many that they're bound to lose some. It's just too many good players that are available, whether you're talking about Ndamukong Suh or Rob Gronkowski you want to get back, or Ryan Succop. And the big three, of course, being, you know, Shaq Barrett, Chris Godwin, and Lavonte David. I mean, those are all key pieces of their Super Bowl team, not to mention Leonard Fournette and some others. So it's going to be a process. We're going to kind of have to go through it. But like I said, I think for now, if we get to the 4 p.m. deadline and they are going to designate a franchise player, I think it'll be Godwin. Check back on TampaBay.com. That can change at any moment. Speaking of players, Gerald McCoy was on SiriusXM NFL Radio. I think he was on with former Bucks GM Mark Domenech, if I recognize the voice. But, you know, Gerald had signed with the Cowboys last year. He was part of the Cowboys, went to training camp with them. And then, like, I think the first day, he suffered a right quad injury, and it was season-ending. And he only had a one-year deal with the Cowboys. Of course, you know, back in 2019, before Arians' first season in May, they, quote, mutually parted ways, the Bucks and Gerald McCoy, after nine seasons. It was really kind of a contract dispute. It was kind of more than that. I think, you know, for whatever reason, I don't think Arians had a good evaluation on McCoy in terms of what he wanted in that defense. And, you know, I think they knew they could get Ndamukong Suh. And once they knew that, that's when they released McCoy. They waited, I think, until they knew that Suh wanted to play and that that he was going to sign with them, because they signed him quickly thereafter. McCoy went to the Panthers. He had an okay year. Made about $8 million, I think, that season, and the contracts were similar, him and Sue. But then he fell on the injury last year, so he hadn't played. He's 33 years old, and he was asked about Tampa, and he just wanted to make it clear that he goes, look, you know, we didn't leave on bad terms. He goes, there's a lot of misperceptions about, you know, myself and Jason Light. He goes, I've talked to Jason Light. I've talked to the Glazers. I text all those players over there. You know, texted him during the season. We're good. Everything's good between us. I live in Tampa. It would be wonderful to play here again. And he said, you know, obviously when they were, you know, winning the Super Bowl, I was texting them all the time. And he goes, and all I've ever wanted to do was win here. So I'd be very, very happy to stay in Tampa and play for the Bucks again. We'll see. I will say this. It seems unlikely to me that that would occur. We don't know what's going to happen, though, with Sue. And you don't know what McCoy, you know, would be willing to play for. The Bucks obviously are in a cap crunch, so if they needed a veteran to play inside, you know, maybe not as a rotational guy, as a starter perhaps, but you know, they're going to get William Golston back. They've obviously got Vita Vea, who's going really well, and some others, and you may draft a guy. You just don't know. But it seems unlikely, to say the least, that may occur. But Gerald McCoy putting it out there that he's available to all 32 teams, including his former one. All right, let's get to the questions, Steve.
All right, well, you mentioned some receivers, so we'll start in that category. We had two questions about this. Scott asks, how's O.J. Howard's injury rehab going, and will he be ready for the start of the season? Meanwhile, Ellis asked, will O.J. Howard be a Buccaneer when the 2021 season starts?
From what I understand, I saw O.J. Howard during the Super Bowl practices. He was out there, was not practicing, obviously, one part of the team, but he was moving around pretty well. That Achilles is pretty much healed. I think it's about a 9-month injury total. So he should be ready for training camp, and they have picked up, you know, the fifth-year option on him. He was off to a really good start before he got hurt. I know it was just a brief couple of games, but him and Tom Brady – spent a lot of time on and off the field together in the short time that O.J. was still playing, and he was really you know, starting to come on. O.J. Howard's always been a talented, talented guy, and you know, particularly in the pass game, he's a difficult matchup. And so, you know, when you look at a guy like Rob Gronkowski, who I think they want back, but Gronk, you know, is not going to play for that many more years, you wouldn't think. And, you know, they've got O.J. for 1 year if they want him on that fifth-year option, which is guaranteed against everything except injury, but it looks like he's going to be healthy enough to play. So, you know, the odd man out in this scenario might be Cam Brate, because if you remember a year ago, you know, Cameron Brate was the guy that was supposed to make over $6 million. They gave him a haircut. He took a pay cut down to about $4.25 million, and he's back on the books now for almost the same, almost close to $6.5 million. So I think for him to stay on this team, at minimum, he may have to take another salary cut. And I don't know what Cam's thought is about that, or even if it's even, you know, the math works. I mean, again, what's going to happen with Gronk? Can you get him back? If Gronk goes elsewhere, would he play for somebody besides, you know, playing with Tom Brady? So all of that is in there somewhere. But as far as O.J. Howard goes, young player, guy that you drafted, starting to come into the peak of his career, has had some really unfortunate injuries, and that's a story. That's part of the problem with him. But I would think they would welcome him back, and I would be surprised if he wasn't with his team. Now, he's also a guy that if you wanted to, you could trade for 1 year. You know, you got 1 year left on his deal, and if somebody came and said, hey, I'll give you a fairly high draft pick for him, we really like him, we'll take him on for one season, you save $6 million or so on the salary cap, you go with some other tight ends, whether it's Gronkowski and Brate or whatever, but because Brate's under contract for a number of years, but I don't know that that's the way they would go. I think Howard will be on the team, and I do think he'll be healthy.
All right, there were some reports on Monday, and Joe asked about this, about OBJ apparently that Tom Brady would like Odell Beckham Jr. on the Bucs. He asked, why would he be willing to let Godwin get away for that locker room cancer?
Well, first of all, Tom Brady, what Tom Brady likes, Tom Brady gets. Think about that first and foremost. I mean, a lot of people thought Antonio Brown, you would describe him very similarly, right? Only more so because he had off-field issues. And certainly the last two places that that Brown had been, you know, he got released by the Patriots, you know, cut by the Raiders, vice versa, whatever it was. Obviously had trouble in Pittsburgh. Was suspended for 8 games, and yet Brady really wanted him. And so guess what? Voila, he appears at midseason on the Bucs, and quite frankly, turned it on when they needed him to the last quarter of the season into the playoffs, and he's a Super Bowl champion. So, you know, I don't know that Beckham to me has been an extraordinary talent. I wouldn't put him in the Antonio Brown category in terms of disrupting teams. He got hurt last year. For the Browns, I think they were happy with him. I know Baker Mayfield likes playing with him. The issue there would just be his salary. I mean, he's got 3 more years left on his contract, and he's still an extraordinary talent. He's coming off a season-ending injury, and I think his contract's about $15.8 million or something like that, or over $15 million. So, you know, you would say goodbye to Chris Godwin, right? You would probably say goodbye to Antonio Brown. It would be very difficult to make that decision, you know, to take Beckham and trade for him. Then you're talking about also, what are you giving the Browns? I mean, you know, this is not a free agent, so they're going to want draft pick compensation. Are you really, you know, rather than just franchising a guy like Chris Godwin for, you know, for $16 million or $17 million, you got no draft pick compensation. If you do that, he's yours. You know, you can put the tag on him. Would you rather then let him walk as a free agent, go someplace, and then now you're going to give up draft picks and pay Odell Beckham Jr. more money or around about the same money or whatever, but for 3 years be under contract with him? So I just don't see it happening. Again, if they lost, let's say they don't franchise Godwin. Let's say he leaves as a free agent. Let's say something else happens that, you know, they're not comfortable with the receiver position and Tom lobbies hard. Maybe they make the deal. And it would all depend on what Cleveland wants for him. But obviously Brady likes all good players and he likes all good receivers. So I'm not surprised he would like Beckham. But I don't see it as a fit given his contract situation. And just like I said, you're not giving up draft picks and paying a guy when you can just pay a guy.
All right, Ren asked, since the 2021 draft isn't a good class for the Bucs' perceived positions of need, particularly interior defensive line, edge rushers, do you think that this year's draft will show fans whom the Bucs prioritize as having long-term future with the organization? For instance, drafting a guard, meaning re-signing Kappa, becomes less of a priority?
Well, I mean, I think you always look to continue to fortify your offensive line. You know, you've got some guys I'm thinking of Ryan Jensen, you know, and some others that are coming up on contract situations in the near future. Alex Kappa, you mentioned, might become a free agent soon. I think they really like Alex. And my experience is that when you draft someone, especially out of a small school like he came from, and he develops into a starter, it's unfortunate he got hurt. And they were lucky that Aaron Stinney, the guy that came in, did a really, really good job. I think that, you know, I think that you're going to, you know, you're probably going to reward those guys, right? And it all, again, it's finances. It all depends on all of that. But you always want to draft the best player you can. And if it turns out to be an interior offensive lineman, so be it. But I would think that they would be concentrating more on defense. That's not to say you weren't going to draft an offensive lineman, but I don't see them then drafting one high enough to where you're going to say, well, you know, this guy's going to replace Kappa, or this guy's going to replace Ali Marpet, or what have you. But they're going to need to make decisions. I mean, you know, Jensen, you know, is going to be a free agent soon, and I think that you know, you're always looking to fortify the offensive line. I think left tackle, you got one more year with Donovan Smith. To me, you know, getting another tackle would be key, or you could move. You know, maybe you move somebody to left tackle and draft a right tackle. I mean, you just don't know how that's going to work out. But offensive line, when you have a quarterback like Tom Brady, you're always looking to help that situation out. And I don't know what's going to be at 32. You know, sometimes the last pick of the first round is the best running back in the draft, you know, and not necessarily that you're down on Rojo, but he's going into his final season.
Chiefs got, you know, Chase Edwards-Helaire last year in that pick, so.
There you go. Yeah, exactly right. So, I mean, I think that you just want value. You want the best player, you know, the best player available, they say, but it's always the best player available at a need that you have. And what if you lost Lavonte David? What if linebacker became a priority? I just don't see their offensive line. You know, again, always want to draft and develop those guys. You've got a little bit of depth with Stinney now at guard. He can play either side. Marpet can play center. So you got some flexibility on your offensive line for next year. But I think that, you know, it's always a value position. But always think tackle first, then interior lineman, because there's more value on the tackles than there are inside. We'll see. I don't think that they're going to just blow Kappa off, and I don't think it's a tell if they were to draft a guard fairly high necessarily, because you need two to play, and you really need more than that if you're going to get through a season without a big drop-off. Look what happened to Kansas City. They lost four offensive linemen. I'm going to tell you, the reason why they weren't competitive in that Super Bowl was very simple. They couldn't block anybody. They could not protect Patrick Mahomes. And as talented as he is and his escape artist, I mean, he's Houdini back there and making these crazy throws, they simply couldn't block anyone. And you never want to be in that situation. Very few teams have five good offensive linemen, much less six, seven, or eight. It just doesn't happen. There's a reason why guys are starters. When you get injuries, you know, you have to have someone like Stinney come in and play and play well. So they've done a good job. I think they'll do it again, but I wouldn't read anything into that.
All right, Brian asked, do you think the Bucs will draft a quarterback this year to groom behind Tom Brady?
If it falls right, yeah. I don't think they're going to do it with the 32nd pick. Now, you know, if one of the top quarterbacks, for whatever reason, started dropping like a stone, you'd be alarmed as to why that was happening, but I think there could be, you know, four quarterbacks going the first round. The interesting guy, and I think we'll probably write about this a little bit, is Kyle Trask at Florida. You know, I think he's going to probably get into the second round, maybe late first, but I think he'll get into the second round. And, you know, the reason is he doesn't wow you with his arm strength. Not an incredibly athletic guy or mobile. Neither is Tom Brady. His arm's okay, but it's, you know, he makes good decisions and he makes them quickly. And sometimes that position is about, you know, the quick twitch ability to read out defenses and throw accurately. Look, all these guys, one of the things I'm always amazed at is, like, people say, well, that guy, he's not very good. He doesn't have a big arm. Well, first of all, you don't make it to the NFL. These guys have thrown football since they were in high school or before. And you don't get to the NFL unless you can throw the football. Okay. They can all throw the football. They can all, as Brad Johnson used to tell me, hey, I might not have the strongest arm, but I'll break your nose with it, you know. And he was right, and he could. So understand they can all throw. Some can throw better than others, but it's about timing. It's about getting. It's about recognizing and reading defenses. That position, we've seen Brady do it. It's anticipation, right? And the nuances of playing the quarterback position. Wouldn't it be great for who if the Bucs were to say we're drafting a quarterback because we really like name the player and he's there, even in the second round, and you say we're going to put this guy behind the GOAT for two more years, and he's going to learn everything Brady knows, and he's going to see how Brady prepares, he's going to see his work ethic, he's going to understand the offense, all those things, and then in 2 years, you know, you're not rushing a guy that's not ready to play, but in 2 years maybe you have something. So they are doing their homework on quarterbacks, you know. They'll do their homework on all of them, but in particular guys like Kyle Trask, because there's a possibility that he may be there. And you got to be prepared because, the quarterback position is the whole game. And, you know, I think that they like Blaine Gabbert. I think he's another guy we didn't mention with free agents that they absolutely want to resign. I've heard them suggest, and Bruce Arians has suggested, that maybe Blaine Gabbert is going to take over from Tom Brady when Brady retires. So there's a lot of ways to do it, but you need a young quarterback. It's the oldest quarterback room in the league right now, and so I think it is possible they could draft a guy. I don't know it's a priority because, again, you're trying to win a Super Bowl, okay? You've got the GOAT, so you need players around him, but it would seem like a good time to do it if it fell right.
Now, Bruce Arians does realize Blaine Gabbert's 31, correct? Because when Tom Brady retires at age 50, when he retires at 50, Blaine will be 40. Is he okay to have Blaine take over at 40?
Well, I mean, Blaine is now using the TB12 method. Blaine, by the way, I don't know if you've ever seen this guy. He's jacked up, man. This dude, he's got some of the strongest. He's got a really strong arm. He throws it through a brick wall, and he's got, you know, great feet and legs. And I mean, he really works hard. So, I mean, Gabbert's a physical specimen at quarterback, but he hasn't played in a while, but he's, you know, he too is out there trying to get better every day and learning from Tom Brady, and they really like him. You know, Bruce Arians has won games with him before, so that's why he went and got him. But, yeah, he might be a bridge guy to the next guy. But you're right. If Brady plays till he's 50, maybe Gabbert may retire before that. We don't know.
All right, Tommy asks, hey, Rick, with the NFL looking to add a 17th game, how would it be determined who gets the extra home game? And does the NFL want to do the 17 games to make up for lost revenue last year?
I think they do, and I think it will happen. It's still got to be collectively bargained with the NFL Players Association. But I thought
they already got that from the players.
Way.
It's just up
Did
to
they
them
agree to it?
Yeah, it's just up to them to decide they're going to do it. Which
whether this year or next, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I expect them to do it. And the way they're going to do it, it sounds like, is, you know, rather than to make it fair from a competitive balance standpoint, it's an odd number game, obviously, but to make it fair, 1 year the NFC teams will visit the AFC teams, and 1 year the AFC teams will visit the NFC teams. And next year it would start, NFC would be at AFC. So you'd have one more road game than you would home games, right? You'd have 8 home games and 9 road games, and that's 17. And they would make it competitively balanced this way, in that, you know, in this case, I believe that the NFC South would play the AFC South, and that would be the number two teams in each division would be Tampa Bay at Indianapolis. So you imagine Tom Brady going back to Indianapolis, where, you know, those Colts fans love him. And so that's where that game will be next year when the schedule comes out. If they go for the 17th game, which I think they're going to. So, yeah, they have a formula I think they're going to follow, and I think that's going to be it by not winning the division, you know. For example, and it creates some good matches. Like, for example, Green Bay would be at Kansas City. That's a great game. You know, I'd love to see that game. So mm-hmm. There's more money for the players, obviously. And, look, if you're going to play, I say this all the time, you know, the 4 preseason games aren't needed. It's a 20-week season right now, no matter how you split it. If you go 17 regular season and 3 preseason, yes, it's true that the starters don't play that 4th preseason game, and so maybe there's not as much exposure to injury and stuff like that. But for the amount of money they're going to get as a union and as a league for that 17th game, it's going to be well worth their while. And, you know, to me, is it going to shorten careers? You know, I mean, I think every player – you know, it's just like Thursday night. Every player, you know, their dirty secret is about Thursday night. You know, players like, well, we don't like it. No, they do. They really do. Cumulatively, it may not be the best thing for their careers having to play 3 days after they play a game on Sunday, but or travel and then play. But really, practically for the week, you know, they don't have to practice. It's all walkthrough. It's much easier on their bodies. It's a short week, and then you get kind of an extra bye week at the end of it because you get Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday off. So it really works out well. And there's so much money. I think, you know, it was $150,000, $200,000 per player basically on average that they're going to give that up, you know, to do away with Thursday night football. So for that reason, I think there will be a 17th game, and that's how they're going to do it. So Bucks at Colts would be quite a matchup.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
All right, Les ask. I'm setting the over-under on Rays victories this year at 87.5. The front office is on fire, but you can't convince me that losing Blake Snell and Charlie Morton won't cost this team some games during the course of the year. You going over or under?
87.5. This sounds like a Vegas wise guy to me. I've read them all over the map. I'm going to take the over. There's no real reason why, except that they've won 90-90 in whatever the last few years. Here's what I think about the pitching, and he's right. It's very hard to convince many people, including me, that losing Blake Snell and Charlie Morton makes you better. It does not. But last year, you know, remember now last year, how many games did they play? They played
60.
What, 60 games? Mm-hmm. So nobody has been stretched out. Okay, there's a lot of pitchers that used to throw close to 200 innings, 180 innings, 150 innings. Nobody did that last year. Okay, so there's an unknown about now going back to 162 games. How are these arms going to react? And the Rays' approach was, we've got to make up for the innings and the performance of Blake Snell and of Charlie Morton. Now, how do we do that? Well, you don't do it with two guys. You didn't find those two pitchers that just plug and play. There's our Blake Snell. There's our Charlie Morton. However, they went and got a bunch of guys. And, you know, maybe they don't throw 150 innings. Maybe they throw 85. Maybe they throw 90 or 100 each. But at the end of the day, they have the analytics that they can show you that, you know, Michael Wacha or Rich Hill or whoever, if we put these guys in these situations and they throw this much, and, you know, by the end of the year, our sabermetrics are going to come out with the same pitching performance as a staff. We just won't be doing it with, you know, three or four guys, and Chris Archer is part of that. So, you know, I think the Rays are smart enough, and I think you have to trust them. And particularly, you know, the other thing they factored in is just what I talked about. Like, you know, even if Charlie Morton and Blake Snell were back here, okay, how stretched out are they? How many innings are they going to give you? You know, are both guys going to go? They both had arm injuries a year ago. They both have struggled a little bit of late with that. And so, you know, we don't know that they would have been completely healthy and recharged enough to give you 150 innings plus. So I just think that this is, you know, knowing the season they're coming off of and knowing what they're facing, I think the Rays' approach is probably going to pay off to be the right one. Again, they beat you with the 45-man roster, not the 25-man, and through the course of a season, the depth of their pitching and some of the arms that they have got in their system. They got guys throwing 100 miles an hour now in spring training. Some of the best arms in baseball are in that organization. And I think Waka's going to make a big bounce back. I think Archer, not being the ace of the staff without all those expectations, he's still making good money, but he's going to be behind one or two pitchers, and Tyler Glass now being the front line guy now. I think that's going to help Chris Waka with a better defense behind him. You know, there's a lot of things they liked about him when they analyzed his game with the Mets. So I trust the Rays, and I'm going to say that they're going to win – very close to 90 games again. Maybe that's just blind optimism, but I think they know how to do it. I don't know how you can doubt this organization after the success that they've had, and I love Kevin Cash and what he has done. So I'm going to go with the over on the 87.5.
I'll take the over, but just barely. I'm saying 88 to 90 range. And my reasons being, I think Boston's going to be better. I think Toronto's going to be a lot better. Mm-hmm. Their division's going to be very tough. Now, they are going to get to play teams from the Central and the West, so they'll play some weaker teams along the way, too. Where last year, if you remember, they only played the AL East and then the NL East to reduce the travel. So I think the pitching is going to be an issue, but I think their division is going to be better, and it's going to be a tougher sled in the division. So I'll go that 88 to 90 range as far as wins for me.
Sounds about right. Sounds good.
All right, Tommy asks, Rick, how do you like Blake Coleman so far? I would like him to score more, and when Kucherov comes back, do you still see Blake Coleman staying on the third line?
I don't know about the line, Steve, but I think they got something in Blake Coleman that they sorely lacked, and I love his game. You know, I haven't found anything that he can't do if you need him to do it. You know what I'm saying? Like, he seems to be a guy that can help you in almost every phase, whether it's special teams, third line, you know, scoring if you need it. I mean, what have you found that you don't like about Blake Coleman right now?
I love him. I mean, look, this team doesn't need him to score. I mean, he scored 20 goals before for the Devils, so he can score. He's not getting power play time for the most part. You know, that's where you can get a lot of points. And Andre Palat this year is racking up the power play points.
There you go.
But, yeah, the energy he brings, Yanni Gourde will tell you, you know, he's the most annoying guy to play on the team, not Yanni. teams don't like playing against Blake. I mean, he's a lot like Yanni Gourde. They don't give up.
Right.
They're going to be on you, harassing you, never giving up on that puck. You know, as much as, you know, last season Julian Breezeball took some criticism for what he gave up to get Blake Coleman and Barclay Goodrow, you see what both of those guys have brought to this team, and it helped them win a Stanley Cup. I mean,
those guys
were huge parts of that, too. Mm-hmm. You see why he gave up what he gave up to get that extra year, too. It wasn't like they were rentals for one season. They got him, you know, the back half of the season last year, which turned out to be the bubble, and then this year as well. I really like Blake, and I like Barclay, too. I mean, they both bring some different things to it, but you know, he just doesn't quit, and he can pretty much, you know, you can put him anywhere in your lineup, and he's on the, well, Cooper would criticize if you said third line, because he'd say it's A line. He doesn't like numbering his lines, and he's made that very clear. But the line with Gourde, Coleman, and Goodrow was very effective. But the good thing about Blake is you can slide him up into a top two line role if, you know, when you have injuries or someone's out. You know, he has scored 20 goals in this league before, so he's more than capable of that.
Is it possible that Julian Breezeball, he won the cup, right? Mm-hmm. Is it possible that he's done a better job than his mentor?
Well, I don't know if you say a better job.
I mean, Yzerman built the club, right?
And Julian Breezeball has been by his side the whole time. I mean, he was his assistant the whole time Yzerman was here. So,
right.
And he's been a part of it. You know, I think Yzerman and the whole staff, from Al Murray and drafting to Breezeball to everybody in the player department, hockey ops department, built this organization, and it's loaded. I don't know if Yzerman makes those trades last year.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he would have given up that much to get those guys. But mm-hmm. I think Julian Breezeball said, you know, particularly after the year before when he didn't make a move, they set the records and then got swept out of the playoffs.
Right.
He said, I'm gonna make a move if I can get the guys I want. And, if you remember, the other part of this is because Goodrow and Coleman both had another year left on their deals, nobody was talking about them as trade partners. You know, it's possible that very few teams even called or inquired about them. But these were two guys that the Lightning targeted and said, these are the type of players we're looking for. And there may have been others that they targeted, too. They said these were the two they targeted, but it's possible they had a list of five or six that they were calling around about. And if you're trying to trade for something that isn't available, you've got to pay a hefty price to get it. And they gave up a number one pick for Barclay Goodrow. They gave up a number one pick and a previous number one pick in Nolan Foote to get Blake Coleman. And, you know, it's a steep price to pay. But Julian Breezeball was, I'm going all in, but I'm not just going in for this year. I want them next year, too, knowing He was going to have some salary cap crunches this year, which Nikita Kucherov's injury kind of helped out a little bit, a lot actually. But he knew he was going to have some salary cap issues, so I want players that have another year that I can get. You know, Blake Coleman's making, I think, 1.7, somewhere around there, and Barclay Goodrow's a little bit less than that, I think. That's off the top of my head. But, you know, he got players that not only were going to help you try to win a cup that year, but you were going to have the next year, too, if you had to get rid of an Alex Killorn or a Tyler Johnson or Andre Palat to get under the salary cap. So, you know, it was a bold move by Julian Brisebois, and it worked. And I really like what both of them have given.
And it was a seamless transition, and they have won one cup, and they are now favored to go back and defend their title, and they're off to one of the best starts in franchise history after this many games.
So the best, and they have the top winning percentage in the NHL this year. Toronto has more points, but they've played several more games than the Lightning to this point. So
that's right.
If you look at points percentage, meaning, you know, the total possible points you could have achieved, you know, divided into the number of points you have, and they have the top percentage in hockey. I think Vegas is just barely behind them than Toronto.
Yep. Good deal for them.
We'll wrap up on this, and Paul asked, a few months back you did a show on best sports movies. And returning to that subject, have you guys watched the 2021 Golden Globes Best Male Actor in a Comedy winning Ted Lasso Season 1 as of yet? It's on Apple TV. He says it's the most uplifting sports comedy he's seen and the perfect antidote for COVID quarantine.
I'm going to admit, and this is sad, but it is absolutely true. I'm not going to try to fake anybody out here. I don't watch a lot of TV that does not involve live sports. I'm going to be very honest. I've got probably about 20 years of catching up to do on series, dramatic series, epic, you know. I mean, I think the last series I watched was The Sopranos. That gives you
wow.
an idea. Yeah. So all I'm saying is I've seen the previews. I like who's the lead actor in that?
Jason Sudeikis.
Jason Sudeikis, who I like. He's done some good comedies, but I don't know anything about it. He's a soccer coach, right?
Well, he's a football coach.
A football coach.
And he gets hired to coach soccer in the Premier League in England.
Okay. That's the premise.
Yes. Yeah, so it's a football coach who knows nothing about soccer going over to coach a Premier League soccer team. So it's actually very good. I did watch it. I was a little late to it. I think about a month ago or so I watched it. I'm not a huge Jason Sudeikis fan. He's one of those guys that it's kind of hit or miss. Either he's really good or really bad, in my opinion. He's fantastic in Ted Lasso. I enjoyed it more than I thought I would. I know a lot of people had said it was really good, so I was like, okay, I'll check this out. It was really good. I know they're filming season two right now, so that has begun. So hopefully we'll see a trailer soon, and you know maybe they'll announce a release date on that soon. It's on Apple TV. I think you can get some free subscriptions if you don't have it yet. I think I bought a Roku device, and it came with 3 months free in that, which is why I tried it. But it's Ted Lasso is a very good show. You would enjoy it. The background is soccer, but it's all about people and relationships, most like most TV shows are. But it's really well done, very funny.
They won a Golden Globe, right? Is that right?
Yeah, he won the best male actor in a comedy for that. So he's very good in it. It's just I don't want to give away too much if you haven't seen it, but I haven't.
I'm putting it on my list though, but I just don't know when I'm going to get to the list.
Yeah, I think the first season was just 10 episodes. I think they're about a half an hour each. I think the second season is supposed to be 12 episodes, I think I heard. So, but it's very good on Apple TV if you haven't seen it. So, Paul, I agree with you. It was phenomenal. I enjoyed it. Watched it quicker than I thought I would. You know, you're watching it like, yeah, I'll just watch one, and then you watch three, and it was very good.
Well, it was the Golden Globes. It was funny. You know, first of all, Tina Fey and who was she with? She was hosting
Amy Poehler
from Saturday Night Live. Amy Poehler, they're the best, right? They're just so funny. And one of the things they said was how, people will complain that a movie is too long if it lasts more than 2 hours, but they'll sit there and binge watch some of these TV series for about 8 or 9 episodes. And it's true. We'll do that, you know.
But there's actually a perception to this, and I've noticed this with Netflix. And being in the industry, I kind of pay attention to stuff more. But when you watch like a Netflix TV show, like House of Cards, I watched. So they would have, you know, whatever many episodes. But each episode was about an hour. It would, you know, anywhere from 50 minutes to an hour. But when you watch a television show on NBC, CBS, whatever, is they're going to take, you know, if it's a half an hour, they're going to take three breaks, right? There is drama and suspense being created for every break. You're leading into it. You know, there's always a cliffhanger to get you to stay through the break.
Absolutely, yeah.
And so it makes it feel like it's going faster because it's creating anticipation. You watch like House of Cards on Netflix, and that crescendo builds up for the whole episode. And so it feels like it's a lot longer watching that than it is. It's the same as two episodes of whatever else you watch, but those two episodes feel like they went by so much faster because, you know, Netflix almost makes it like it's a movie. And same with the movie is you build to the crescendo to the end generally. And maybe there's a crescendo or two in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
But there's not that, you know, television or radio too is supposed to do the same thing, is create this, you got to come back for this. You know, you always hear the tease on the newscast or with television, you know, your drinking water could kill you. Details at 11.
Mm-hmm.
What? I got to watch that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's trying to create that urgency, which when you watch movies, there isn't there. So if it's not hooking you right away, it does feel like movies take even longer than it does. And some of these television shows on streaming services, because they don't have commercials, can feel like they're dragging at times because they're not constantly creating that urgency in it to get you to stay through a television break or commercial break.
You know, it's funny that COVID has created a demand for on-demand, right? And people can watch, have time maybe because they're staying home more or whatever. For me, my life hasn't dramatically changed because I'm working from home. So I worked from home a lot before. Where I used to get a chance to watch stuff was on vacation because I would travel and I'd be on a plane for a number of hours. And then that's where I would watch, you know, the things I wouldn't watch, like live sporting events at home. So I haven't traveled really other than just to games and things, you know, quick trips. I think the longest trip we took was Las Vegas last year. But I'm looking forward to getting back out this summer and going and traveling again. And then that way I can catch up on some of this. So I'll definitely put that on my list. I've seen the reviews. It should be really, really good. All right. Thanks for your questions. We appreciate them very much. You don't have to wait for a mailbag segment. You can ask us questions anytime, and we will try to answer them for you. You do that by sending them to us on Twitter at SportsDayTB. You can reach me on Twitter at NFL Stroud, or many people have emailed them to me at rstroud@tampabay.com. Tom Jones, my former radio partner, will join us in the next couple of podcasts. For Steve Versnick, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great day, everybody.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.